In this episode of My Cat's Tale, we meet Stacey LeBaron and her Community Cats podcast.
I think that cats can be the glue that can pull our neighbors together. I want them to hear that there are others that care about what they're doing. My feeling is that if we learn to help animals, using cats as an example, we are going to better our community in general.
Joining me now on My Cat's Tale for something a little bit different in this episode, Stacey LeBaron joins us. Hello, Stacey.
Hello.
Welcome to the podcast. And for the first time, we're not going to be talking just about one or two household cats. We're going to be talking about a ridiculous number of cats. Tell us how you're involved with our feline friends.
Sure. So I am the host of the Community Cats podcast, and that is the place where you can turn your passion for cats into action. And so what I'm all about is helping folks help cats in their community that need extra assistance. So if anyone has a stray cat in their backyard, if they've lost their cat, if they want to help a neighbor with extra cats that they have, I have been involved with doing what's called trap, neuter, return. And I'm not sure if folks are familiar with that phrase in Scotland. Trap, neuter, return is where you, if you have like 10 cats in your backyard, you will use humane traps, trap them, get them spayed or neutered. We'll do an ear tip, which is like a little snip on the ear, so they're always identified and returned back. And so we won't have any unwanted kittens out there. Poor kittens, 75% of kittens, they don't make it through the first year when they're outdoors.
And it really does depend on the location where you are. Some cities in America, this is very much under control. Some cities have quite a large population of cats that's growing. What drew you to this?
So I started back in 1994 in a small town called Newburyport, Massachusetts, and we had 300 cats living on the waterfront area. And I know there are quite a few waterfront areas in Scotland where, you know, there's restaurants and the cats were climbing up on the windows by where the people were eating. They were in the dumpsters. Many restaurants had 30 to 40 cats behind each restaurant in this small town. And we just decided to do something about it. And we decided to do trap, neuter, return, which was very new. It had just started in the UK, actually, in the 80s. And then that tradition moved over to the United States in the early 90s. And we trapped 300 cats in that first year and got the colony under control. We had 14 feeding stations and volunteers fed twice a day. We had little bio pictures of each cat on the feeding stations, and we tracked them. And in 2008, the last cat died. So out of 14 feeding stations, we now have zero down there.
So you must have had an affinity with cats before the project started.
Yeah. So why and how I got involved with cats, I grew up with a cat, a very independently minded cat named Duncan. And she came before I came. And she taught me a lot about personal space and respecting her space and all that as a toddler around an older cat. And she was fantastic. She lived to be 20. And I, from that point on, my mom was a lover of cats too. And it continued on through the family. And in 1994, I joined this organization. I offered to be their secretary on their board. I thought I could type, I could write, I could do some administrative stuff, but never be involved in the shelter life. Never, never, never. Little did I know, I became very involved in all of that over time.
Tell me about Duncan.
So Duncan, one would think Duncan was a male cat. Duncan was named before Duncan got spayed. So when my mom got Duncan as a kitten from the neighbor down the street, she was told that Duncan was a boy cat, and Duncan was not. When Duncan was brought in to be spayed, Duncan was determined to be female, but Duncan already knew her name, so we continued with Duncan for all of that time. And beautiful tabby cat with marble, the typical marble coloring of a tabby, short hair. She was on the portly side, so she had to go on a diet later in life. And but she was really a very good cat. She was my mother's best friend basically for quite a few years, and great companion. And she, you know, put up with children, and that's where I learned a lot of lessons that not all animals want to be held and cuddled like toys and all of those kinds of things. And so she just was a wonderful, wonderful cat. She would sleep on my dad on Sunday mornings, and so, you know, she picked who she liked, and great cat, but she was able to be indoor, outdoor. And ironically, she was spayed. This was back in 1960. And little did I know that spaying and neutering of cats at that point in time was not a regular thing. It wasn't something that folks in the United States really did that often with their cats. It didn't become popularized until probably a decade or so later. And so I was really impressed that my mother, I thought, oh, well, every cat got spayed once they were, you know, out of their kittenhood and that kind of thing. But it turned out that it was a very low percentage of cats that got spayed or neutered on a regular basis in the United States in the early 60s. And so I'm thinking that really instilled in me the importance of getting your pets spayed and neutered, which has always been a bedrock for me. That's a must do, very important.
Why do you think your mother was so ahead of the curve? Why do you think she made that decision? Did you ever talk about it?
Not specifically. I didn't become aware of this until sort of later in life. But she was always very progressive. She went to a very female-oriented Ivy League-type school in college. So she was very progressively minded, feminist-oriented. And I don't mean to put that together, but I think some of that, you know, independent reproductive rights, all that kind of stuff probably played a role in it, where she just said, you know, went to the vet and just said, obviously she needs to be spayed. You know, I don't want kittens. She did not want kittens at all in her house. And so it just made a lot of practical reproductive sense for her.
What did your mother think of you starting the project then?
So she was fascinated by it. So I actually did not start the Merrimack River Feline Rescue Society, which is the organization I ran for 16 years before starting this podcast. So I came in 2 years after the group had started, and she was extremely supportive of the work that I would do, because my feeling is that if we learn to help animals, or if we help cats specifically, using cats as an example, we are going to better our community in general, because we're going to be teaching our neighbors, our partners, our collaborators, everybody, you know, how to treat animals and other human beings with dignity and kindness and care and appreciation. I have created so many friends because of this bond around cats, that are people economically, gender, ethnically. They're all very different, but we all have this one common passion, and that's cats.
What surprised you the most about doing the project, that first project with the 300?
It was a labor of love. And what surprised me was that it was not happening all around the country. It seemed obvious to me. So I feel like I was born and bred with this attitude of, you don't trap these cats and euthanize them. That's just not an option. That was never on the table for me in my mind. And I never thought that folks would be doing that across the country and around the world, would be trapping cats as a nuisance and euthanizing them. It just seems so practical to trap them, neuter them, ear tip them, support them, and let them do the work that they know how to do, which is rodent protection. They're working cats. They're getting rid of the rodents. I had the mayor call me up and ask me if we were removing cats to a barn relocation program that we had just started. And she goes, I really hope you're not taking the cats from the waterfront, because we need them there to control the rat population. And so we do have this tradition of working cats in our mind, but I think society right now is trying to put them into apartment buildings, and they're trying to compartmentalize them. And I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with an indoor only cat, but I also think that there's a role for an indoor-outdoor cat and a role for a working cat. So I think we have to be a little more flexible about that.
So this project, you said there, the cats, you know, 2008, yep. those first cats are gone. It's not 2008 now, much as the heady days of 2008 feel like, what are you doing now?
Yeah. So in 2008, and actually in 2000, based on all these calls I got from folks outside of our area and our region, they said, we need one of your organizations in my town. We need one of your organizations in my town. So, and here I blindly felt like, oh, well, don't you already have one, you know? And so the obstacle that I found most of these folks had was the ability to afford the spay neuter surgery. So in 2000, we created a program for free spay-neuter clinics once a month for what we called feral cats. Back then, we called them feral cats. I now refer to them more as community cats, but back then we called them feral cat TNR clinics and spay-neuter clinics. Since we have veterinarians donating their time, technicians donated their time, we got supplies, we fundraised for supplies, and we would spay-neuter, you know, about 1,200, 1,300 cats a year at these Sunday spay neuter clinics. So any cat in a trap that needs to be spayed or neutered, we would do it for free on a Sunday, one Sunday a month. And we continue to do those clinics. That organization continues to do those clinics up today. Also in 2008, we started a mobile spay neuter clinic called the Catmobile. So we have a Catmobile. And in the period of time since 2008 to now, over 65,000 cats have been spayed or neutered on that Catmobile, and it's offering affordable spay neuter for owned cats in the community, because it starts with Adam and Eve, right? We all know this. It starts with Adam and Eve. Adam lives in one house. Eve lives in the other house. Adam sprays in the house. People get upset. They let Adam out. Eve, she goes into heat in the house and drives everybody crazy. Eve gets let out. Adam and Eve meet. And there you go. You've got your feral cat colony starting. So we started the Catmobile program so that Adam and Eve, if anything happened and they did have to go outside for whatever reason, they were going to be spayed and neutered. So we were going to prevent that unnecessary birth of kittens happening outdoors.
I mean, it sounds like a plan, but it also sounds like you've just went from one step to the next. It's just like, oh, I'm doing this now.
One step at a time. That's right. You get one target project. So one backyard, all it takes is one backyard to turn your passion for cats into action. So if you have 4, 6, 8 cats in your backyard, or if there is someone in your community that's got a lot of cats in their house and they need assistance, just takes working on that one project focused, get your success, and then you can move on to the next level. And that's what I want to do at the Community Cats podcast, which is trying to encourage folks to say, this is not impossible. This is possible. And we can work together to make it happen.
And here we are doing that classic thing of a podcaster talking to another podcaster about the podcast that they're doing on the first podcast. Yes, cliches have finally arrived to my cat's tail. But the Community Cats podcast, like many, is one of information and one of advice. Tell us when it started.
So our first episode released in June of 2016, and we are at about 480 episodes at this point in time. Come springtime, we'll be at 500. And really, I wanted to get the stories out of folks that were just doing every bit that they could to help cats in their community. It could be nursing bottle baby kittens. It could be starting a working cats program. It could be doing, you know, general TNR in your community, setting up an organized TNR. A lot of people don't even know how to set up a nonprofit organization, you know, to do trap, neuter, and return. So it can range the whole gamut, because we don't have to be all things to all people. That's another important point. You can be one piece of this. You don't have to feel like you have to do it all. And I feel like we do have that pressure sometimes. And we also sometimes feel like we're alone. So we're hearing voices of others that are involved and that are doing this and really helping improve the lives of cats in their community, which is really so important. We have 26 online educational events in addition to the podcast every year. So we do a monthly trapper certification workshop, which helps people, like, I think maybe I want to trap. That doesn't sound so bad. So let me do this 2-hour training and get myself certified so that I know how I'm doing it safely. You know, how am I going to make sure that the cat doesn't pee all over the back of my car so the car will smell like cat for the rest of your life? I mean, that will save you much more than that $10, right? So there's a lot of different pieces of information and tips and tricks that you need to know before you start embarking on this trapping project. How to get to know your veterinarian, how to work with your veterinarian. So we do that on a monthly basis. We are very much committed to that trap, neuter, and return model for all across the world in the country. And then we do some longer events. We have free webinars too. We have colony caretaking tips and tricks, trappers tips and tricks, the drop trap, a trapper's best friend, you know, a range of different free webinars that are all available on the website, thecommunitycatspodcast.com website. Any of these things that I am saying right now, everything is available on that website. And we also, we do an online kitten conference, online cat conference, and we also have a United Spay Alliance conference. I'm on the board of another organization called the United Spay Alliance, and they are 100% committed to really ensuring that everybody gets access to affordable spay neuter for their cats.
Is this your job now?
So I'm involved in a lot of organizations. I do this about part-time. So yeah. When we say it's part-time, we do know what that means.
What do you think the younger you would have thought of what you're doing now?
Well, the younger me thought I would be an architect. So, and I think it plays a role. I then moved into urban planning, which I then moved into nonprofit management. And so it does dovetail a bit into this role because they're, we have urban systems. They are feline systems. But when I was in architecture and urban planning, I was very into a concept called co-housing, which was sort of private living, but some communal factors to it also. And it's very concerning to me right now that many people, at least in the United States, they don't even know who their neighbors are. They don't know their neighbors at all. This level of community and connection doesn't exist. And it's so incredibly important when we're talking about the cats that are in our neighborhoods. Our cats are more connected with the people in the community, in the neighborhood, than the people are. You know, the cats get fed by 5 different people in town. They just make the rounds, but we don't even know who those people are. And so I really do think that cats can be the glue that can pull our neighbors together also.
What about with your neighbors? You don't have cats at home at the moment, but do you have the community cats or the local cohabiting cats around you?
So we do. I don't have any cats, and it was an intentional decision on my part because I travel a lot. And so for me, if I left my cats home alone, or not alone, but with a pet sitter for 2 weeks, it would drain on me. I would not enjoy my trip. And so I've had cats for my whole life, and I decided to take that break and take that time. However, where I live, I visit Europe a lot, and where I live there, there's quite a few community cats there, and I know who owns them. Many of them are owned by restaurants. Some of them are owned by folks in condominiums, and I know who they are, and the cats come and they visit my place and they visit me, and then they go back home at night and that kind of thing. And so I would say, yes, in general, I do, in Europe more so than when I'm here in the States, but I'm in country here in the States. So we have a barn down the street, and I certainly know they're barn cats.
When you come to Europe, is there a cat that just, Stacey's here, and runs to you?
Not at this point, no, but there's a beautiful black cat named Sundar, and he's just a love, but he's a love to everybody. So I don't feel like I'm very special. And I do have a soft spot for black cats, I will say also.
But you can see cats coming back into your home at some point.
Sure, down the road. I'm a godparent to a couple of cats, as well as some dogs of my my nieces, they have dogs and cats. My daughter, she has a cat named Maggie. So, and one of my nieces, she's got a cat named Lily, who has is an influencer on Instagram and has done all this fun Instagram stuff. So I certainly have spread the love. I do work with quite a few families that can't afford the veterinary care and they want to be able to keep their cats. And so I feel like I help supporting them in my way to help them be able to keep their pets and their family.
And what about the people and the cats that you meet through the podcast? What stands out?
Well, there's two people, two listeners that tune into the podcast. One is the person who's running a small nonprofit organization that is trying to trap 200 or 300 cats maybe in their community and help support an organized program. And many of those folks take advantage of our Community Cats Grants program. So my conversations with them are much more sort of businessy, where it's, you know, how can you get fundraising? How do you get boards of directors? You know, do you have to file a tax return, or how do you keep track of the money and that kind of thing? And then there are the calls that I get where I have a pregnant cat in my backyard and I need help. And, you know, they are in LA, they're in Las Vegas, they're in, and I am in Vermont in the United States. And so what I will do is I will try and connect them through and find an organization that will support them in their community. And they're like, I love these cats. I love these cats, but I just need to get them spayed or neutered. And a lot of passion, emotion. Sometimes I will get calls about a hit by car cat and I need emergency assistance that way. And they're just so thankful that you're giving a call back. That's the most important thing, is that if somebody reaches out to you, please call them back. Even if you don't know the answer, please call them back, because there are a lot of organizations that don't call back, or they'll people will reach out and they don't feel like they're getting a response. And sometimes I don't know the answer, but I will call back and listen, just listen, to what they to say about their cats, because they're just, they just don't know. And there's just panic, and you want to have some share in that emotion with them and understand that, that they're really struggling.
It sounds quite a paternal role.
Yeah. I mean, I just want to be a friend to folks. When I first started the podcast, and I don't know about you, when you started your, you know, they say, what's your typical listener? My typical listener is someone who's out there trying to trap that last cat in the colony at 2 o'clock in the morning. They're drinking, in the US, we have Dunkin' Donuts, drinking their Dunkin' Donuts coffee at 2 a.m. in the morning. And they're sitting in the car and they're like, nobody else cares about this cat. I want them to listen to my podcast. I want them to hear that there are others that care about what they're doing and that they're helping cats and that we support them in the work that they're doing.
It sounds a lovely place to be, a lovely way to help a community that is there but is sometimes out of sight. It just, it sounds lovely, Stacey. It just sounds so rewarding.
I'm so thrilled that I started this podcast, and it was at the suggestion of my then 13-year-old son, Scott. We were in the car driving back and forth from Massachusetts to Vermont, and I was listening to podcasts in the car, and he had just started playing the electric guitar and started recording. And he goes, you know, Mom, it'd be so easy for you to have a podcast about cats. And at that point in time, my mother had gotten very ill with dementia. So I had had to take a step out of the animal, the day-to-day animal welfare space. And I thought, hey, this is something I can do. I like talking to people. I love hearing what other people are doing and learning from them. And so that's how I got started.
I have no idea, no connection to that idea of starting a podcast. Yeah, maybe just a little. But that also means that I know it's really important to let people know where podcasts are. So where can we listen to Community Cats Podcast?
Sure thing. So we are on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Pandora, and obviously all of those links are right on our website at thecommunitycatspodcast.com. And then you can just click on your preferred podcast listening source, Castro. I use Castro and listen through Castro. We are there also. And, you know, all of our educational events are there, everything about organizations. I will say, if there are groups that are interested in the Community Cats Podcast Grants, At this point in time, we are only granting to United States 501c3 organizations, but still reach out to us because we do a mentoring process and we might be able to include you in that to help with fundraising advice and mentoring. We do a cohort of 12 organizations. They all work together. So you get to meet other folks. So we still, you know, nobody is being left behind. We are going to figure it out. We will make sure that if someone reaches out to us and they need help, we're here for them.
Stacey, it sounds such a noble cause. Thank you for taking it on. Thank you for talking to us. And thank you for telling us your tale of my many cats' tales here on our podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. And thanks you to all of your listeners for turning your passion for cats into action.
You've been listening to My Cat's Tale, a Spence Media production. Listen to more tales of our perfect pets at mycatstailpod.com and support us on Patreon. Stacey LeBaron there, and the tale of the Community Cats Podcast. And as mentioned, communitycatspodcast.com if you'd like to listen to another podcast about cats. And I know this week has been a slight diversion away from one person, one family of cats, but I thought it was such an interesting story that it would be great to bring on the show. Let me know what you think. Contact details back at our website, mycatstailpod.com, or you can find us at mycatstailpod@gmail.com or on twitter.com/mycatstailpod. You get the idea. Ta-ra for now.